Welcome to the Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Thierry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
We are two extra fancy restaurateurs here in Seattle that are now, I'm cooking coconut prawns and cheesesteaks. And Chef, what are you doing
these days? I'm doing box to go.
You're doing
boxes to go.
Boxes to go. So, no, I'm Tom Douglas, and I'm owner of a couple of Seattle joints now that are up and running and getting back into it here down at SeaTown. We have the market fish fry and specials every day, which is super fun. And we eat out on the patio. I shuck oysters on Saturdays and Sundays, and it's just a blast. I'm going to bring my six-foot griddle down to SeaTown and do cheesesteaks on the corner of the Pike Place Market. I'm just gonna go for it.
Nice.
I did them on the dock yesterday out in Ballard, and then I just thought, well, God, this would be fun on the sidewalk in front of SeaTown. Let's just bring the griddle. That's the beautiful thing about bottled gas. Anyway, I've got SeaTown. Of course, we're here at the Hot Stove Society doing our radio show, and we do our virtual classes here. If you ever want to take a cooking class from us, just go to hotstovesociety.com. And we are out at the dock. Well, Series 5 is open downtown, but we're also out at the dock in Ballard, 52nd and 14th Northwest, where we do Series Pie to Go and our dinner box group. Chefy, you are in the middle of a vegetarian extravaganza in your dinner box.
Yes, it's actually vegan, Tom. Vegan, no gluten, no sugar, no dairy, obviously, because it's vegan. And it is hot and hot and hot.
Hot, hot, hot.
We sold out of our boxes. Very, very hot. We sold out of 80 boxes.
Mm-hmm, nice.
And very incredibly satisfying to... I've been wanting to do this for probably over a year now. Mm-hmm. Well, not over a year. Since COVID started, I wanted to do a vegan. And it's been very successful. And next week, we're doing vegetarian. So we can make the vegetarian who had vegan this week have a little dairy back into their diet.
Mm-hmm. What do you enjoy cooking more, vegan or vegetarian? What's the bigger challenge for you?
Well, to me, I love vegan because it's so clean. To me, I don't understand people who think it's a challenge to cook vegan because I'm not... The thing about vegan to me when I look at vegan is I don't try to make things that are not. Like, I don't try to make a tofu turkey or whatever. None of this stuff. I just use the ingredients that are available. And if you look at what's available in the market right now, there is plenty to go with.
Yeah, to me, it's almost a simpler process, right? Because you just have to step back and let the ingredient speak for itself.
Right, and it's beautiful. I mean, all the vegetables, all the greens, everything that's available on the market right now, all you have to do is just put a little dressing, maybe a little crisp, maybe a little texture, and then you're done. You've got a beautiful dish in your hand, and it's nice and clean and simple. You know, and I don't know, I made a cake, Tom. I made a cake that had no dairy, no gluten, and no sugar.
You are a master of... cuisine right there. We got a big show. We're going to celebrate the celebrate clam chowder. Tina Knoll's going to be here with Peggy Brousseau, talk about plant-based diets. We've got Chef Annie Elmore back really quick here. Some questions for Tom and Terry about who we are. Sometimes people just want to know, like, are you for real? What do you really do? Places we miss is going to be back. And then, of course, we are going to talk with Annie Elmore about her... Amy, what is it, her vermicelli dish?
Yes. Well,
yes.
Yes, it seemed like you were a big fan of the vermicelli bowl she does.
Yes.
And we're going to bring it back for one of our dinner boxes in March.
Oh, cool. So, Annie Elmore, she's the one who messed up on saying there's Lunar New Year was only in a couple of countries. And apparently it's in a few more than a couple of countries.
We're going to give
her learned that. Chef, let's talk about our taste of the week. I'll jump right in with... there's a place over on Lake City, a very unassuming facade, until you pull into their parking lot, which is down in the, you know, down behind the facade on Lake City Way at about 137th, and it's called Goody's Market, and it's a halal. I don't know if it's halal market, if it's all their meat's halal. I think it is.
I looked at the website. It's really cool.
Yeah. They have a great little, Middle Eastern grocery, I will say, lots of Arabic, you know, a little bit of this and that, but I had a couple of things there, and my taste of the week was their lamb kebab. And it's the kind of kebab that's on a skewer, but it's also it's the meat, ground meat mixed with the bulgur wheat. And I had the spicy version. And I'd asked them, I said, now, because, you know, some cuisine, spicy is kind of weenie spicy, like you would even eat it, right? And then other cuisines, it's spicy is blow your face off spicy. So he said, oh, no, this is just spicy. It's not like hot spicy. So I bought the spicy ones. I pan fried them. They browned up beautifully. I pan fried my kebabs. They would have worked good on the grill, but I was a last minute thing, and they were delicious. And what I really liked about them is, you know, I'm a big fan of great tzatziki. I mean, I like to make my own. Mm-hmm. I like to strain my yogurt. I like to drain my cucumbers. I put tons of mint and parsley in there, lots of lemon zest. I like a full-flavored tzatziki. Usually the ones I find in grocery stores just don't live up to what my expectation is. And so they use no-fat yogurt, or they use all sorts of, like, bad ingredients. This one I saw there, of course I'll buy it because I want to try it. It was a delicious tzatziki, too. So not only were the kebabs good, but smothered in this tzatziki, they were awesome. So that is my taste of the week. Okay, you got 2 minutes to tell me yours.
Well, I'm working on the next week's box, and I'm doing a roasted celery root soup. And unfortunately, I don't go out right now, so I couldn't tell you where I went for dinner in the last week except my house. But roasted celery root with first salt with some onions, nicely caramelize the onion, peel the celery root, cut it in small cube or, you know, mid-sized cube, put them in there, sweat the whole thing up really nicely, a little bit of dry vermouth, mm-hmm. White vermouth, and then fresh tarragon and fresh thyme, vegetable stock, reduce down, nice amount of cream, obviously, blend the whole thing up, and you've got this gorgeous onion and celery root soup, but it's roasted, so it's beautiful flavor because it's got a little caramelization on everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's really mm-hmm. tasty, and I think this time of year, celery root right now are in top. You know, this is the time of year where they're top. You know, in 3 months from now, it won't be any good celery root left on the market. They'd be small and shrinking, and but right now, they're in the heart of the season, and mm-hmm. I also had a couple leeks left in my refrigerator that I used and throw that in there. I also had a couple garlic cloves and I put in there. That was extra in the soup. You don't have to put all this if you don't have it, but they were just showing me that they were dying. So I used them, you know, chopped them and put them in the soup and sweat them at the same time as I did the onion. And but the flavor of celery root was so delicious. I love mm-hmm. celery root.
Me too.
Good flavor.
And then you put your stick blender in there and you pureed the whole thing?
Yeah. The whole thing pureed and nice and thick. You know, kind of like a butternut squash soup or whatever, any of those pureed soup. And the good thing is when you make it, you make more than you need. You know, you put a quart or two in the fridge, in the freezer, and next week or in 2 weeks from now, I'll be like, what am I going to have for lunch today? Boom. Celery root soup.
Sounds delicious, Chef, and you can get that in the Chef's Vegetarian Dinner Box next week coming from Luke. Right. Just look it up on Luke. Okay, Chef, when we come back, we are going to talk mangoes, dried mangoes. It's one of my favorite little snacks that I keep around the house. Let's put them in a dinner party. Let's have a dinner party, Chef.
Looking forward to it.
As long as we can't do it in person, we'll have to do it virtually. On Cairo Radio, it's the Hot Stove Society Show, 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's time for Mango. And Chef Terry and I are both the type of people that don't generally eat out of season, but I have always felt like the wintertime was an okay to enjoy the season of the tropics. I think it's a tradition that goes way back when, and whether it's pineapples or guava or coconuts or mangoes, it is
passion fruit.
Yeah, it's always a time, this time of year is when I think about those products. I think because we're so desperate for something fresh and lively.
Well, it's also the season for them to have it. And those actually happen to travel quite well, especially pineapple.
Mm-hmm.
Travels quite well. So, you know, having a beautiful ripe Maui pineapple in January in Seattle puts a little sunshine and some hope for summer.
Yeah. And I do think there's some confusion about when we always talk about eating seasonally. It's a little bit more about when there is a season for something in our marketplace to kind of support it during that season, like asparagus or whether it's local blueberries or whatever. Support it during that season and move on to what else is in season in our marketplace. This time of year when you're either working out of your pantry, right, things that you've canned, I work out of my freezer a lot this time of year because it's all stuff I've put away from the summertime, tomato sauce, you know, all the good soups. And so that to me is part of the winter season. But it's also a time to splurge on some stuff that does travel, like you said. Okay, Chef, we're going to do a dinner party, and I am going to host it because you're not going out and you're not having people over. So I'm going to host it at my house, and I'm going to invite your new daughter-in-law and your son over for dinner because I have yet to meet her, and I haven't seen Ryan in a million years. You know, when our kids were kids, we used to see each other a little more often, but now I haven't seen your kids in a long time. Well,
I don't see them enough either.
Yeah. And so I've never met your daughter-in-law, so we're going to have them over for dinner, a little meet and greet, and we're going to feature some Maui mangoes in every course. So awesome. I'm going to get started. So I'm going to dehydrate some mangoes, and I'm going to make a powder out of them, and I'm going to do a rim runner. You know what I mean by a rim runner? I'm going to take a lime and I'm going to put it around the rim of the glass, and then I'm going to take my glass and dip it in the powdered mango, and then I'm going to make myself a little Mai Tai, a mango Mai Tai with some mango juice as the kind of the alternative. A typical Mai Tai is what? A little bit of grenadine, a little bit of orgeret syrup, a little bit of, or a lot of rum, and I'm going to put a little mango juice in there. So I'm making a mango Mai Tai with a powdered mango rim. Oh, my God, that sounds good.
What we need to do is sit on the beach watching that sunset. Oh,
exactly.
I'm there. I'm so dying to go to Hawaii.
Okay, right. Your turn, Chef. What's our next course?
I think we're going to do a little bit of Seattle meets Hawaii in terms of a nice Dungeness crab salad with mango, fresh mango. Mm-hmm. And the mango, I'm going to lightly pickle them, you know, in a light pickle brine, not too vinegary, but just nicely balanced water, vinegar, and sugar.
So your process is 1-2-3, right?
Right. And then
which is what?
In that process, also put a little bit of harissa, so there's a little bit of heat in there, because I want those mango to have a little bite, and then make a nice crab salad. With grapefruit cream dressing. So you do grapefruit, you know, pink grapefruit, dice small, take the juice, mix with a little bit of Dijon and some olive oil, put the whole thing together with the crab, very nice, light, and then mix that with the mango, nice little mango salad, and then maybe some lettuce underneath, or not. Yeah, a couple of leaves of lettuce would be nice, maybe some bib lettuce, which is actually not very flavorful, but very decorative. I would probably go actually Belgium endive would be some nice Belgium endive and put the salad onto two or three of those nice little Belgium endive leaves so you have a little bitter from that. And I think that would be delicious. Mm. Nice little crab salad.
So when you said a cream dressing, you didn't mean like dairy cream. You meant make a custardy dressing using mustard as your emulsifier?
Correct. Creamy dressing. Cream as in cream.
Yeah. Because when you said grapefruit cream dressing, it was like, I'm not sure about that.
No, creamy as in, creamy, not cream.
And go back one second. I was trying to get you to say it, but your 3-2-1 is what? When you pickle something, tell people what your 3-2-1 is.
So it's 3 water, 2 vinegar, 1 sugar. So you do 3 water, 2 vinegar, 1 sugar.
Yeah, so.
So you have a pickling juice that's not too acidic, you know, because sometimes when you do some pickling, it depends on what the purpose of what you're doing. We change those ratio depends on what the flavor outcome we're looking for. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking for something really pickly, you're obviously not going to put 3 water, you're going to put 1 water or 2 water. So the vinegar is prominent.
Right.
But if you're trying to do a nice little quick, like on a mango, I'm not trying to pickle the mango to the point of really vinegary and lose the mango flavor because I want to keep that mango flavor, and I want to just have a little hint of it. Plus, the harissa in there will give it a nice little kick, but not too strong. And so all these flavors are just added.
Right.
But not hiding.
So I'm going to take for the entree, I'm going to take green mangoes, which I love to use. We shred them. Right now we have them on with our coconut prawn pop-up, our trashy prawn pop-up down at SeaTown. But a green mango, but I'm going to cut it up in big chunks. So you just peel it. You take the little unripe seeds out of the center, and you make big chunks, maybe 2x2 or 2x3 chunks. And then I'm going to braise that in a black cardamom and cumin tomato curry. and just kind of slow braise those big chunks of mango until they're tender. I don't want them to fall apart. We're not looking for a mango puree, but we just want like a, you know, I think about this when I do big chunks of daikon radish, right, in a little Japanese style soy and sugar. And but this I'm going to do in a slow simmer in a tomato curry. But the black cardamom and the pan-browned cumin are going to be the extensive flavors. And, of course, there's garlic and, you know, lemon zest. And at the end, I'm going to stir in lots and lots of Thai basil and cilantro. And we're going to just have this beautiful, lovely curry on basmati rice. When I was at Goodies this week, I had my choice of 10 different basmatis. And I picked one, and it's the grains are so long and so fluffy. It was quite a treat. Okay, you only have a minute and a half to tell us what you're going to make for dessert using mangoes for our dinner party.
Grilled mangoes, slices, and rice pudding. I'm going to make a nice vanilla rice pudding, simple, eggs, sugar, vanilla, nice. I'm going to use almond milk, not regular milk, and cook the rice in there. Reduce it down and then do some beautiful grilled mango. Maybe put a little spice on it or not. I'm not sure, but I was thinking of something a little bit salty that would be right on top of those mango diced and put that and fluff that into the rice pudding at the last minute. And I love rice pudding. So
that sounds delicious. Although we just had rice with my entree. So chef, I'm not sure that works. Can you make a tapioca pudding?
Oh, that would be even better.
Yeah.
Tapioca.
Tapioca.
What did I think of that, Tom?
I don't know. That's why I suggested it.
No, obviously tapioca would be delicious as well.
So that's the mangoes we missed. We had dinner with, what's your daughter-in-law's name again?
Selena.
Selena. We had dinner with Selena and Ryan, and we didn't invite Terry and Kathy, just so that we had a chance to talk with Selena and Ryan, and we'll go on from there. She seems very nice. It was a great dinner.
She's super nice.
Super nice. She drinks a lot, though, doesn't she?
She's in the front line.
Exactly.
Every day.
No, she doesn't drink. That was just a joke. I'm just making a little joke. You know, my daughter is just about ready. Her due date is the 4th. I'm going to be a grandpa.
Oh, my God, Tom. Yeah. That is awesome.
She's got a new one coming. I've already named it for her, Hercules. She's in love with that name. And I just want to.
Sure she
as soon as I see it, I'm going to
sure
say, hi, Herc. Hi, Herc.
Oh,
there's a show on TV years ago, Hercules, and there was always a little kid in there going, hey, Herc. I've named it, so she doesn't have to. That was hard work for them, so I just decided to do it myself. Up next, places we miss. Let's travel to Italy, Terry. I know where I'm going, what town I can't wait to get back to. I'm curious about yours. When we come back on the Hot Stove Society show on Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. It's time for us to travel in our mind here at the Hot Stove Radio Show because we're not allowed to travel anyplace else. I just got word that my Scotland trip is in danger again. I couldn't go last May, and now I'm getting word that I might not be able to go this May. It's such a sad state of affairs. But that's not going to stop us, is it, Chef?
It is not going to stop us because we have so much memory of going around the world that we can live for another 100 years without going anywhere.
Yes, I hope that's not true, but it is true as far as our memories go, and that's how we've been traveling for the last 6 or 8 months. Once we realized we were in it for the long haul here with no travel abroad, and so we have been all over the country. We've been here in Seattle. We've been to New Orleans and New York in our heads, and let's today travel to Italy. It's one of my favorite places. It's also one of the last places I traveled to when I traveled to Europe. I was in Torino and that northern area there, Alba, Montalcino, Monforte, that area there, I want to say. I know I'm mixing up all the names, but traveled there. That Alba area is one of my favorites. Of course, it's the home of the wine that I collect, the Piemontese wines, which is the big hitters there are Barbaresco and Barolo. Of course, there's Dolcetto and Barbera in that area, too. Asti Spumanti, you know, that Moscato d'Asti, and lots of fun wines there. But when I travel there, it's more for the food and the Barbaresco and Barolo. What's your favorite place to travel to, Chef?
In Italy, I've only been twice in my life. I know that's going to sound hard to believe. I actually lived in Chamonix when I was 16 years old and went to Italy twice through the Tunnel du Mont Blanc, you know, the tunnel under the Mont Blanc, and only stayed in the Valley of Aosta, right on the other side of the tunnel.
Where the Olympics were, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And went to a restaurant in a town called Courmayeur, which is basically the first town after you pass the tunnel. You know, God forbid we go any further into Italy. So the first town, there was a
you French are so snobby.
Hold on. So it looked like a farmhouse. And this is like 40 years ago. Went to this restaurant on New Year's Eve. And the thing that shocked me the most was the size of the platters on the table of charcuterie, you know, all kind of like beautiful prosciutto and salamis and all kind of beautiful charcuterie on the table, but big platters. And then, you know, you go through that for about an hour with some nice red wine, you know, and then after that, they bring the pasta, giant platter of linguine, tomato, fresh herb, and all that right on the table. And same thing, you serve yourself and have a big bowl of it, you know. And I thought that was the coolest thing ever because I'd never seen anything like this, but I thought, and the food, of course, was fantastic and delicious. But the size of those platters on the table, and especially because the whole thing was an old farmhouse. Mm. So it's very memorable. You walk out of your car into this gravel area, into this very old stone house. And there we go. You have some very old wood table with big platters and wine glasses on the table, but not fancy wine glasses, just regular wine glass and bottles on the table, and then go at it. And there was maybe eight of us, and we had a blast.
I bet you did. I mean,
it was really a fantastic memory for that. And my other Italian memory is in Sicily, in Taormina. I've talked about this before, but probably the best caprese salad I've ever had in my life, and mostly because nothing was refrigerated. Everything was room time, and everything was top, top, top flavor. The tomatoes were perfectly ripe. The mozzarella was absolutely beautiful and fresh, and the basil was just basil like it's supposed to be at its peak, and beautiful olive oil on top, and a little bit of sea salt, and that was it. Sitting on the sidewalk right outside of this little cafe / restaurant in Taormina, my God, the memory of that lunch will never ever go away. It was just fantastic.
Sounds so delicious, and of course, it must have been right in season, and you know, that's the thing about when you have caprese, especially. I think you get the warm mozzarella that from the dairy in the morning that's never been refrigerated. It's just such a lovely thing. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, that makes a hell of a difference when you really get those products at their prime.
Yeah,
you know, and you've never. I mean, refrigeration is kind of a sabotage for most of the food. You know, if we didn't have to refrigerate most of the food would taste a lot better. Because refrigeration actually does not really help in a lot of cases, except it keeps it alive longer, supposedly. But it kills a lot of the flavor and the texture at the same time. So,
interesting.
But yeah, good memory. And I would love to go to Italy with you, since you love Italy so much. I would love to go to Italy with you. That would be a great trip. And I think I would gain a few pounds, too.
Do you remember when you had the big charcuterie platter and things like that? The last time I was in, or when I stayed in France, it wasn't the last time, but when I stayed in France down in the Pont de Venise area, we ate at a restaurant called La Grappe d'Or, and they sat in, and they brought out that charcuterie platter like you're talking, but they brought it out, and it was like the cheese cart. They basically, you take what, and then they watch what you take, and that's what they charge you. And everything else goes back to the kitchen. And it's not a lot like French cafes that serve like a bowl or like a tureen of herring. And they basically, they weigh it on the way out, and they weigh it on the way back into the kitchen. You just grab what you want. But it's just something that we would never do in this country. We are so...
Which is too bad. I mean, we need to relax a little bit. It's not, you know, there's so many things that are not wrong with this.
Yeah.
Just right. A beautiful tureen, one slice is enough. You don't need to eat the whole tureen.
No, this was a tureen filled with layers and layers and layers of smoked herring and smoked mackerel. And so you just take a fillet, and then they take it back to the kitchen, but they bring the whole thing to your table. And then they bring it to the next table next to you. It's just a funny thing that we would just never do. Okay, Alba. That's where I'm going with my little memory travel. I'm going to the little town of Alba. It's the capital of the Piedmont area. And just up the hill, 26 kilometers away, is Barolo. And maybe 10 kilometers, not even, 8 kilometers up the hill on these little hilltops is the town of Barbaresco. And that is, there's a little restaurant up there called Anticatore. And it's one of the first restaurants that I've ever went to in Italy that changed my life. It's right across the street from the Gaia Winery, which just got these big, huge iron gates and stuff. You know, it's like a fortress. But right across the street there, there's the Produttori Barbaresco, the best value in all of Italian wine, the Produttori Barbaresco. It's still about $35, $45 a bottle, and it is one of the kings of wine. And then at the Anticatore, the old man would always stand there by the kitchen, and he would have this huge roll of fresh golden yellow pasta that was just made. And then he would, you would order the tagliarini, and he would just slice away with a knife and just chat with you. And he didn't speak a word of English, and he'd just chat away, blah 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 blah. And I would somehow, we connected at the same time, and like everyone did with him. It was just an amazing thing. So then he takes that beautiful tagliarini that he's just sliced, drops it in boiling water for not even a minute because you want it to keep its bite, and it's sliced super thin, so it doesn't take long to cook at all. And then into a pan with sage butter and finished with grated cheese. And it's just like heaven on earth. The most simple little deal, and it's like heaven on earth. And that changed me. It changed my whole mind about Italian food because when I first went to Italy, it wasn't fancy enough for me. It's like I had all these expectations as a chef, and the simplicity just I didn't recognize how cool that was. Then after my second trip there, it was like, oh, I get it. You know, a great tomato sauce is a great tomato sauce. It doesn't have to be fancy. It doesn't have to be sous vide. It doesn't have to be anything, right? It's just a delicious tomato sauce. And so that's what I love about Italian food and traveling the country. And then the other story I have is, you know, Chef, the plein that we serve at the palace, right? We stay at Giuliana's when we stay in Alba, and Giuliana is about halfway up the hill between the center of Alba and the town of Barbaresco. And it's just a little farmhouse, and I can't remember what they call that when you can stay at a farm. And
like a bed and breakfast?
Or yeah, it's like a bed and breakfast. Anyway, on my third or fourth time staying there, she came out and she showed me this waffle iron. She didn't speak any English either, and she's like, the interpreter, Aldo, said, she wants you to show you how to use this, show her how to use the waffle iron. So I said, well, I'll show you that if you show me how to make the plein, a little pinch pasta with the sage or sugo filling. And so we did. We had a little plein party. She and her daughter-in-law would just make them so fast and so tiny. And that ended up becoming a menu item at the palace for the last 26 years. Yeah, so it's super fun. And I taught her how to make a chocolate waffle, and she was very happy. And because her sister had sent her a waffle iron from New York City, but she didn't know what the heck to do with it. So
that's awesome.
Isn't that funny? Up the K, we're going to continue this rocking and rolling show, which is so fun. Questions for Tom and Terry are up next. These are deeply, deeply personal questions that Amy has gathered from our listeners, and we promise to bare our souls. Is that right, Amy? Is that what you want from us?
Yep. About 43 questions for each of you.
43 for each of us.
Yep,
okay.
We're going to go quick.
We're going to have to do this over a couple of segments. That's when we come back on the Hot Stove Society show on Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Hot Stove Society show on Cairo. This is Chef Tom Douglas.
And Chef Terry Rotiro.
The chef in the chapeau. Coming to us from Madison Valley until pneumonia aftermath eases
up. Quarantine is over.
COVID quarantine is over, exactly. Let's see, Amy, you have some questions for us. And how did this come about? Why are these questions here?
Well, you know, there is this online kind of rapid-fire question challenge that a lot of people have been doing, and I was thinking about it. I've worked thousands of events And I think the number one question, besides is there coconut cream pie here tonight, mm-hmm. is what you and Thierry are like in real life. So thought, you know, let's get to know you.
All right. Should we start with Chef Thierry?
We certainly can.
And are these questions that have come from listeners, or are these ones that you made up?
These are from me.
Okay.
And so this is just kind of rapid fire, quick. You don't need a big essay, but let's just get to know you.
Okay.
All right, Thierry, you are up first. If you were not a chef restaurateur, what would you be?
I would be a singer, dancer, entertainer.
Favorite smell?
Ooh, probably truffles.
Song you can listen to on repeat?
The Big Night, the whole thing, the whole CD of The Big Night.
A dessert you don't like?
Cheesecake.
Ooh. What's your spirit animal?
The dog. Probably the dog.
Who was your childhood crush?
Oof. I would say that
who wasn't?
Lolo Brigida.
Best piece of advice you've ever received?
Slow down.
Superpower you would want?
3 of me, so I could do everything I want to do in life.
Do you have a secret talent?
I can play drums.
Favorite movie of all time?
James Bond.
What's your favorite?
I did not know that.
Yeah. What's your favorite time?
I have the whole collection.
What's your favorite time of day?
Morning.
What's one thing people don't know about you?
I love vegan food.
Something you cannot live without?
A kitchen.
3 words to describe yourself?
Love and believe in karma. You do to others what you want them to do to you.
What's your favorite secret food?
I would say the dry cookie that you can dunk into your hot chocolate. That would be my little favorite junk food.
Cute. What's a talent you would like to acquire?
What's a talent I would love to acquire? I would love to be more into science.
Sweet or savory?
Savory.
What's your most adventurous thing you've done in your life?
I jumped out of an airplane 3 times, and I've been to the top of Machu Picchu.
What's your pet peeve?
People who can't bake goods all the way.
How do you start your day?
I make coffee, and I have a cup of coffee. That's like number one.
What's your favorite holiday?
Thanksgiving.
If you could switch lives with one person for one day, who would it be?
David Bowie, except he's dead, so that would be a very strange switch.
That'd be a very dark switch.
What's one thing you've wanted to try, but you've been too scared to do?
Being in the entertainment business would definitely be scary as heck, but I would love to do it.
What's one thing you wish you knew at 19?
What I know today.
What's something you can't do?
Cutting corners in cooking is a tough thing for Thierry to do.
Can't pull into a McDonald's parking lot.
Yeah.
Shortcut and junk food.
Favorite snack?
Same thing. I don't really snack, so I'm going to go with dried fruits.
What is something you've always wanted to travel with? Or, I'm sorry, what is something you always have to travel with?
Probably earplugs and a mask. Because I fall asleep as soon as I get in the plane.
What movie makes you cry?
Oh, what's the last movie that made me cry? That's an interesting one. I would say Sophie's Choice was a tough one.
What is the cutest thing on planet Earth?
Don't say me, Thierry.
The cutest thing on planet Earth.
Say me, Thierry.
I would say sitting on a small beach in Hawaii where there is no one else but me and Kathy. That would be probably the cutest thing in the world.
Do you like surprises?
50-50.
What's one thing you had to learn the hard way?
Running restaurants.
What's a food trend you would like to see disappear forever?
Piling up a bunch of spices on top of food without the consideration of the power of the spice.
Okay, last question. What did you want to do with your life at age 12?
I wanted to be a singer, dancer, entertainer, and my dad said, what are you going to do during the week? That's a true story.
All right. All right, Tommy
D. My dad looked at me. I told that to my dad, and he looked at me, and he said, well, that's great. He said, but what are you going to do during the week?
You want to do me next week?
Yep, let's do that next week.
Let's go back, Thierry. I have a couple of questions on the cutest thing on planet Earth. You and Kathy sitting on a beach by yourselves in Maui. What if I were to wash ashore? and you saw the great white up close. Would that be the cutest thing on earth?
It would be probably the most surprising thing on Earth if you were showing up on the water.
I'd come up in my snorkel gear and surprise you.
That would be awesome. I mean, I think that would be a nice surprise.
Yeah. Your answers are so thoughtful, Terry. My first tendency is to always kind of like go kind of class clown on those kind of questions. And I got to know you a little better. You're such a thoughtful human. I've always known that about you, but I would also suggest for people that don't know Terry, and I have a minute to say this, is he is a good man, and I don't know that you can overrate being a good person. And one of my favorite things about Chef Terry is he's always thinking about other people first. He's very charitable. He gives from his heart. It's not a pretend thing. And I'm very impressed with you day in and day out with your ability to kind of lead your brigade and to lead our community and to be the man you are. I don't know that there's a higher compliment in my world than somebody to say you're a good man, and we love that.
Well, when was the last time I cried? It's going to be now.
Well, thank you, know, Mr. these are Burgess. These are important things. It's sometimes we just get off joking all the time, but it's important to say sometimes so that people know. You know, some people think I tease you too much, right? But they don't necessarily know where that comes from. That's coming from the heart.
And
so don't ever think that I don't appreciate my friend Terry. Up next, we had another whole hour of excitement here on the Hot Stove Show. We've got the mightiest and smallest chef, Annie Elmore. Mm-hmm. So she's going to be here to talk about her noodles. Spoon-ready clam chowder. Tina Knoll and author Peggy Brousseau are both here to talk about Peggy's new book, The Contented Vegan. And lastly, we're going to play our Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge. And Noel, are you going to jump in on this?
You know, I don't know why, but yes.
Oh, my God.
I'm definitely going to lose.
Terry, we got fresh meat. We're going to make a vegan burger out of her.
Yeah, you are.
All right. When we come back, that's the next hour on Cairo Radio. It's the Hot Stove Society Show, 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo. I'm Chef Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in hat.
We got another full hour for you. It seems like an hour ago when we last spoke, but it's only been 5 or 7 minutes. In this hour, we have Annie Elmore here to talk about her noodles. We love when Annie talks noodles. We're talking about spoon-ready Let's Talk Clam Chowder. It's Clam Chowder Day. Amy, when is Clam Chowder Day?
Well, it was actually February 25th yesterday at Seatown, but we started talking about clam chowder, and we wanted to talk about our love for it.
Oh, well, there you go. I'm looking forward to that, because when we make our clam chowder at Seatown, I always have a cup. I check it for deliciousness every time we make it, mm-hmm. and I really like clam chowder, it turns out.
That clam chowder is great. It has so many fresh herbs.
Yeah, but it just turns out I didn't realize how much I kind of like clam chowder. Yeah. So that creamy clam chowder. We've got Peggy Brousseau and Tina are here to talk about the Contented Vegan. And lastly, we're going to wrap up this hour with Food for Thought Tasty Trivia. Let's jump right to Annie Elmore. She's out at our Ballard warehouse at the Sirius Takeout. And Amy, tell us what you've asked Annie to come on and talk about.
Well, you actually asked her to come on about her vermicelli bowls that you really loved. Mm-hmm. And so Annie and I were talking about doing another dinner box, which is going to come up in March. And we just thought you would talk to her about these traditional Vietnamese flavors.
Okay, Elmore.
Hi, Mr. Douglas.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fantastic. I'm glad you're good because I'm intent on ruining your day. Which you claim every day you see me, it ruins your day.
Did I say that out loud? Yeah. I thought I was just thinking in my head.
Yeah, exactly, you smarty. Chef Terry, have you had Annie's vermicelli bowls?
I'm definitely disappointed and sorry to say that I have not, and I can't wait.
We're going to deliver one to your house next week. Yeah, we're going
to
deliver one to your house next week.
I can't wait to try it.
I can't wait for you to try it as well.
So, Annie, tell us how you make them.
I mean, of course, a bundle of fresh herbs and vegetables. It always has lettuce and Thai basil, mint, cilantro. Of course, comes with rice noodles, which is called vermicelli noodles. And then the meatballs that I make, I do mine with pork and beef. Pork adds some of that nice fattiness flavor in there. And then lots of lemongrass, lots of garlic, a little bit of onions for that moisture in there so it doesn't get so dense with meat. This meatball is unlike any Italian meatballs. It's not very soft, like, because they add breadcrumbs or sometimes different cultures add rice in there. We don't add any of that. So we're depending on, like, the onions and sometimes people add carrots in there too. The vegetable would serve as, like, kind of a filler in there.
Mm-hmm.
But lots of fish sauce, sugar, and like I said before, lots of lemongrass in there. Chili, if you like it a little bit spicier. I usually sear mine first, and then I roast it in the oven. For that reason, is you're adding another layer of flavor, that nice caramelization on the outside. Because mm-hmm. there's sugar in the mixture as well. So that a little bit of that sugar helps to caramelize on the outside, and then you roast it all the way in the oven. And then before it comes out, I have this glaze mixture that I make with honey, fish sauce, a little bit of Shaoxing wine to thin it out, and I throw it in a pan, and it creates this nice caramelization steam, and it kind of soaks up into the meatballs, and then you take it out and you let it sit in a little bit of that glaze, and then you serve a little bit of that meatball and the glaze with it, and that serve a little bit kind of like a sauce with your noodles as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, of course, you always have nuk chum to go with it. To soak up the noodles with
it. Right. That nook chong, lime juice and sugar and fish sauce. Go ahead, Terry.
Are the noodles hot or cold?
Usually cold. Yeah, it's cold or room temp, but it's never hot. But you can serve it hot, but it wouldn't be like steaming hot. Sometimes what people do for kind of, you know, another level of the noodles would be you serve it somewhat hot. Not steaming though, and then you make this scallion oil. You kind of chop scallion up finely, and you heat up the oil slightly until it's hot but not smoking hot. You throw in that scallion and a little bit of salt, and then you drizzle a little bit of that scallion oil on your noodles, and you can serve that as well. And that's delicious, by the way.
Yeah, that sounds delicious. And so, and let's go back to the lemongrass. I think that freaks people out a little bit. And it really, in my opinion, personal opinion, it is not worth buying unless you buy fresh lemongrass. I haven't tried one dried lemongrass product that's worth
beans. No. Yeah, you would never want to buy dry lemongrass. And honestly, I don't even know where you find dry lemongrass.
Oh, any spice store would have it from like World Spice or Ting Zing Momo or places like that.
Interesting. Yeah. No, I mean, because honestly, lemongrass is one of those funny things. It can be really strong in the flavor if you know how to cook it right,
mm-hmm.
or it won't release any flavor at all. Like I remember we did it once where you just steep it in oil. You don't really get any of the flavor out unless if you hit it with heat. It needs that heat to extract out that essential oil from the lemongrass. And when you dry it, you kind of suck all that out already. Mm-hmm. And it gets so tough and fibery that you don't want. You need it to be fresh and chop it down and carefully, you know, prepare it. You have to tear out the dry leaves on the outside to get that nice tender leaves on the inside, and you have to really slice it thin and chop it even more to release more of that essential oil to get the max flavor out of it.
Right. I always take it there. What you just said, I take the brown leaves off the outside, I slice it thin, and then I put it in the mortar and pestle and pound it with the pestle to kind of break it all up. That's what I do with lemongrass personally. So
that's what we do too. I mean, but for the production that we do here at the warehouse, we do a bigger, you know, amount. So I kind of cheated and go towards the food processor route. But I still slice it down thin first to help it. And then I go it through the food processor to grind it even more.
Mm-hmm.
But you really have to work at it. Although, if you don't want to go through all that work, you can always buy frozen ones that already pre-chopped nicely in the frozen section at the Asian market.
And it's good product? Price. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, depending on which brand you buy, I wouldn't buy a big one. Just buy a little one, so that way you're not keeping it in your fridge or your freezer for too long. Exactly. I mean, anything in the freezer too long is not going to taste good or last long anyway, right?
All right, Annie, thank you so much. And if you want to check out Annie's bowl, Amy, tell people where to get it.
Yeah, it's available March 10th through the 14th at TomDouglas.com.
There you go. Thanks, Andy.
I'm here for one.
All right. Up next, it's clam chowder here in the Hot Stove Society kitchen on Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. All right, let's celebrate. It's clam chowder day here at the Hot Stove Society show, and Amy is so proud of her little pun that she put on our show sheet. She's over there giggling when I said celebrate.
I didn't know if you were actually going to say it.
I did say it. I'm Chef Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in a hat.
Chef Terry is rolling in laughter over celebrate.
I was thinking if you're celebrating in California, you could be calibrating and celebrating at the same time.
That's right. I'm not sure what that means, but I'm just going to say yes, chef, whatever you say. We chef. Clam chowder, clam soup. Clam in general, when it comes to soup. It was Clam Chowder Day last February 25th, and so we got this inkling to kind of talk about clam chowder. We sell so much clam chowder, Chef, down at Seatown, especially now we put up a sign that says hot clam chowder, and people walk right up to the door and say, I want the chowder. They don't even look at the rest of the menu. They just want a bowl of chowder. And usually the line at Seattle Chowder Company in the market is so long. They're the ones who do it in the bread bowl. And the line is so long, people don't want to wait always for it. So we get the stragglers. And our chowder is pretty darn good. I'll just say that right now.
Dynamite.
Dynamite. So,
are you serving it with bread?
We serve it with croutons, bacon fat croutons.
Yeah.
And so they're delicious and crunchy and tasty. And so, Chef, have you ever attempted a New England style clam chowder, what we call New England style, which is added like a chowder base, typically with a roux, potatoes, carrots, celery, onions. We use bacon bits. Have you ever made chowder like that, or do you have a specific way you go about
many
clam time, chowder?
Yes, I've made it many times, but I try to cool off on the roux part. I try not to do the roux because ultimately it's not necessarily necessary as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, no, it's not necessary. It's a style.
I mean, I know it's in the base of the chowder, but I do the chowder without that, and that works perfectly fine for me. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit more liquid. You know, it's not quite as thick. But I love a good clam chowder. And to me, I think the onions, the leeks, the wine, obviously the clams needs to be delicious as well. Manila clam we have around here are delicious. Mm-hmm. And fresh clam. And then, you know, a nice little amount of cream in there, and you're done. And the best part is often when we make clam chowder, we already have a fish stock in the house. Then we add to the wine that's been reduced and cooked with the clam. Mm-hmm. We add a little bit of fish stock. And that, to me, I mean, that's top. Because it's really enhanced that flavor of seafood. And I'm not big. I've had clam chowder where it tasted more like milk instead of clam. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of gross. You know, it's like somebody forget to make the clam flavor in the clam chowder. You know, and I just like my mine to be a little bit more intense.
Right.
Fresher, but the end is very important. A little zing of lemon is also very important. Other than that, I think it's a delicious dish. Definitely comfort food 101. And especially with all the clams we have around here. But you could also do, I've done that before, mussels. You know, we have mussels, they're like panko mussels, and you use panko mussels instead of clam. Obviously, it's a mussel chowder, but the idea of the chowder, it's, you know, the concept is the same.
Mm-hmm. The way you talked about it, I mean, that's two very distinct styles of clam chowder that we just talked about. One being the one like we serve at Seatown, which has got the base, right? It's got the roux base, and it's cream and half and half, and clam broth and clams and all of that. The other one that you talked about, I think people forget that it's still clam chowder. So in my mind, what you just said about the brothy version is you literally just in a pan, maybe your prep is all kind of cooking the potatoes and cooking the carrots and the celery. That's all set and ready to go. And you can even just pop those into your bowl. And then in a pan with the fish stock and with some maybe some cream and your garlic and your onions, stuff like that. And you cook your clams to order, and then you just pour it right over top your chowder ingredients. And now you have this nice brothy, really fresh, because the clams are just cooked right then and there. You got to make sure you have no sandies, though, right? No sandies in our clam chowder.
Yeah,
that'll ruin the whole batch.
It's a wise idea to move the clam out of the chowder, and especially if they're in the shell, and check for any sandies or any bad, you know, something that's ripped, not open. Yeah. If there's a clam that's not open, throw it away, and so on and so forth. So it's usually nice to be able to separate those. But again, this is a very basic idea where you can use all the shellfish we have available in this region, in the Pacific Northwest. I mean, you can use clam, you can use oysters, you can use mussels. You could make a chowder out of just about anything.
Yeah, out of anything. I think it's really nice to get a clam chowder sometimes when you get the actual clams and in the shell still. I mean, that's what's nice about your version of that chowder is that it looks beautiful when it's served in a big bowl and you got all the creamy deliciousness. Maybe even a touch of saffron in there. They would yellow up the whole chowder. Would be beautiful. And when you want to do tomato base instead, it's the same thing, right? It's literally the same thing, except you don't use, in my case, a roux and cream. You use just a tomato puree or chopped tomato, and you make a red chowder.
And a little bit of clam broth, and just use that and mix that with the tomato and cook it gently and put your clam in there at the last minute, let them pop, and then put that in a bowl and most importantly, the nice garlic bread right on top.
Yeah,
Nice garlic croutons right on top of the soup. So, you know, every so often you take a bite of that crouton with that tomato sauce that's like so delicious. So, man, I'm getting hungry.
Yeah, exactly. And then if you don't want the clams, you just leave them out and you still have a nice chowder. You can put fresh, if you want to go vegetarian, not vegan, but you just do roasted corn. You can do a corn chowder, right? You can do, you said you made celery root soup this last week. Little chunks of celery root in there with your potato would be delicious. But chowder, I'm all about it.
Absolutely. And again, it's one of those things. You make a big batch, put some in the freezer, and, you know, you'll be very happy in a couple of weeks when you're like, what am I going to have for lunch? Pop that out, done.
What do you think about the whole bread bowl thing? That is a very popular American thing, and I don't get it.
I don't either. I've had it a couple of times, and I still, to this day, can't figure out why you would want that soggy mess in your soup.
Yeah, that's the problem, right? Because what you really want is a nice, crunchy, kind of toasted, greasy bread that you can dip into your soup. And a bread bowl is just this raw pile of sourdough. And even the outside of the bread isn't toasted. And it's just this, I don't get it.
It's very unhealthy for you, number one. And number two, I don't get the pasty part of it. Yeah. And I'm with you. Just grill some beautiful, the same bread, cut it, put it on the grill, give it a little olive oil, and then, you know, toss it in your soup. It's going to be delicious.
Yeah, I just think it must be a cultural thing that I just don't understand, because people line up for blocks for this where they serve it like this, and it's never been one of those things I could quite understand.
Yeah, well, it is definitely cultural. You know, it's the same thing with the burger at McDonald's.
All right, our pal Tina Knoll is here, and she's coming up next. She is our former producer for 18 years here at the Hot Stove Society and is now off on to people that actually pay her.
I know. Girls got to eat.
Girls got to eat. No, it's Tina Knoll is here, and you're bringing a book. You brought a book here today that
I did. I'm really excited. The Contented Vegan. It's really good. This wonderful woman, she now lives in London, but came from the Midwest, and she talks a lot about how to introduce you and your family into the vegan world. And, you know, I became vegan 2 years ago, a little over 2 years ago now. So it's hard to stay with it. And she's got some really great tips and some interesting recipes that are very beautiful. So I think you'll really like it.
Yeah. And I know you cheat once in a while.
I sure do. My serious pie. I have to have a serious pie. I do.
All right. That's all when we come back on Cairo Radio. It's Tom and Terry in the kitchen, 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo Radio. Tom Douglas here.
And Terry Rotero, the chef in the hat, here.
Yeah, right, Terry. Terry, I know you have a vegan box going out from Luke last week, and you got a vegetarian box this week. Tina Knoll, you know, our old producer. She's a young old producer, I'll say that. She had called about a book that she was enamored with. It's called The Contented Vegan, Recipes and Philosophy from a Family Kitchen by Peggy Brousseau. And Tina, we have figured out how to get Peggy on the line. So this little hero of yours that you've been following in the cookbook.
So fun.
There are so many dog-eared pages in this book already. You must have been busy.
Yeah. You know, I really loved this book because, as you know, I became vegan a little over 2 years ago. And it wasn't because I was really solving any problem. I happened to be producing a show with some whole food plant-based folks, and I started eating like them. And I really liked it, and I liked the way that I felt. And then I started learning more about the environment, you know, the impact on the environment, and sort of the socially conscious parts of me decided to keep it going. And the problem sometimes with becoming a vegan is sustainability. I got started to get really tired of things. And what happens then is you start to be like, maybe I'll introduce a little cheese here and there. Mm. Maybe I'll have some fish or some shrimp here and there. And I really do feel committed to trying to stay vegan. So this book is really great, Peggy, because we have Peggy here with us. What I found about it is it really helps for the new person wanting to explore the vegan world who might be a little bit intimidated. And Peggy, you have something that you call the 80-20 rule. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, I can, Tina. Nice to be here. I wanted to make people feel welcome to the diet,
yeah,
and also to make them feel that they could do it. A lot of people, I think, have a sort of inbuilt sense that they'd like to move in that direction, but they don't know how. And then they worry how to take the first step. And I really wanted to make this a toolkit, but also a very welcoming one. And so the 80-20 rule is something you will have heard in other contexts, for instance, in business and so forth. I think it's called the Pareto principle. But basically what it is applied to a plant-based diet is that if you look back over what you've eaten in the past few days or a week or so, and you'll notice that probably 80% of what you've eaten is, in fact, plant-based. And in the book, I've given the example of a burger, that if you take out the meat burger, you'll notice that the bun, the salad, possibly the mayo, the pickle, all of those are plant-based. And that 80% roughly is of your diet is likely to be plant-based. And that leaves only 20% that you need to address in terms of making transitions or making changes to what you select. So for that hamburger, you could very easily put in a bean burger, and instantly you've got a plant-based or nearly plant-based meal with very little effort.
Yeah, I think it's all sort of about intentionally eating, right? Like when you really begin to break down your what you really eat, a lot of us do eat more plants than I think we really realize in any given day.
Because yes, that's always been for me is like sustainability of like it seems easy to get started, but then like, okay, a week from now, like you said, can you hang in there? Yeah.
And when I started, I got, you know, like you do anything, you buy all 100 mason jars and all the nuts and all the spices and nutritional yeast and, you know, all the things. And what I've learned is that you don't really have to go crazy like that at the beginning. You can slowly introduce things and not feel like you're doing it wrong. Right, Peggy?
That's right. I think gradual is a very, very useful idea here, even though we are in a hurry, aren't we, to correct the way we're treating the environment and so forth.
Right.
But for people, gradual often is the best way. And I call it baby steps, not to say that anything less about them, but that if we make small adjustments and incremental changes, then we feel successful. And that feeling of success propels us on to continue it and, you know, to sustain it. And also, it's something very important to me, also to investigate or explore the plant world. There's so many plants out there that are edible and exciting, interesting, and of course, nutritious. And what you probably experienced, Tina, when you were in the early stages there, was something that's quite natural in transition, and that is that your body hasn't found the nutrients it needed. in the foods you were eating. And that's very natural, and it's easy to happen. What many people do is become what I call white bread and jam vegans.
Right.
And they just eat junk. They just eat junk. Mm-hmm. I have nothing against white bread occasionally or jam, but as a diet, it's very, very lacking, isn't it, in nutrients. And I think our bodies naturally seek nutrients because they are the things that make us feel well, that make us feel energetic and positive and all the good things we want in our life. And so everything I've tried to work with in the book is to say, build a diet that is not only plant-based, but is also very nutritious and one that matches you as a person and matches your circumstances. And to do that, I've encouraged a gradual transition.
You know, Peggy, one of the things that everybody transitioning into this way of eating, or really this lifestyle, a lot of us call it just a lifestyle, sort of a way of thinking, is the million-dollar question, what about protein?
Where
do you get your protein? This is the first question.
It is the vegan question, isn't it? Yeah, well, my response is that protein is everywhere. Protein is made up of amino acids, and they are called the building blocks of life, so that anything that ever was once alive or that is alive has protein in it. Every single plant has protein in it. It's a matter of how much, and for some people, in what quantities are those amino acids within that plant. Now, people used to talk about combining proteins to get the right amount and so forth. I don't do that. I think that the best thing is to aim for variety in your diet. And in fact, I've called it the four cornerstones to a good vegan diet, is when you build variety and whole foods, preferably organic or locally grown, and in-season foods, if you build all of that into your diet, especially focusing on variety, then there's no need to alarm yourself about protein. That's been my experience over nearly 35 years of eating a vegan diet. Plus, of course, I've raised a family on it as well.
Yeah, I read that you were one of 9 children, and you were not raised a vegan. You were not raised a vegan. You made a transition yourself.
That's right. I have been through every single pre-vegan phase that's imaginable, I think, because at the time that I began my journey, there was very little discussion of it. There was very little literature. People just didn't talk about it. I mean, it wasn't long ago when, if my husband and I wanted to go out, we were told we had to inform the restaurant 2 weeks in advance that we were vegan. And things have changed so much.
Oh, yeah, we're very lucky. Here in Seattle, we have some really great spots. And Chef Terry here created a winter vegetable dinner box that I had the other night. And this, if you want to transition to vegan, doing or vegetarianism, or you just want to introduce more vegetables, doing a box like this is such the way to go, because I learned a lot. He had a butternut squash soup with diced roasted squash, perigold truffle, and beet oil. And it was
Lovely.
The flavors were outstanding. And another one of your recipes that I really love is this herb and onion bean butter. For one thing, butter is one of the things that vegans, I struggle with. Like, I really miss butter a lot.
Okay.
And this herb and onion bean butter isn't butter per se, but it is a spread. Do you want to talk about this recipe a little bit? Do you know the one I'm talking about?
Yes, I do. It's a kind of a partner, if you like, or a big sister to hummus, mm-hmm. which also is a beany spread made from chickpeas or garbanzos. But I just wanted something that would have a slight resemblance. So the color is partly from the red lentils and partly from the turmeric that I've included in it. And I wanted it to have the color and spreadability of butter, but with some nutritional enhancement available as well.
And flavor. And so it is very flavorful.
The flavor.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, it's a really good one. I'll put this one up for you guys on Facebook so you can have this recipe.
So, Tina, we only have about a minute.
Yes.
If somebody buys this book, it's called The Contented Vegan. Uh-huh. What recipe would you start them on? What recipe did you find to be dynamic? That butter, number one.
That butter, number one. There is a Jerusalem artichoke soup in here. So one of the things about this is you guys know I'm not a very good cook. I never was, but I've learned a lot, and I was able to adapt, you know, I was able to learn from this, but there's a Jerusalem artichoke soup with truffle oil in here that is spectacular. Mm-hmm. So I would definitely have that be your go-to. The other sweet part of it, briefly, is she has all these wonderful essays in the back that are inspirational and sweet, and they really kind of help you on this kind of journey about intentional eating and thinking about the planet and animals and things like that. So yeah. I love it. She'll be at you're doing a book lecture at Book Larder on March 3rd, so you can check that out too here locally. But you can get it virtually, obviously.
Yeah. And I think intentional is a great word for no matter how you eat, is to be more thoughtful about it. Yeah. Thank you, Peggy, for joining us for a few minutes here on the Hot Stove Society Show.
It's been a delight. Thank you.
Thanks, Peggy.
When we come back, it's time for our Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge. Vegan chef Tina Knoll is going to join us today, and we're going to make vegan hash out of her, aren't we, Chef Terry?
All right.
All right. On Cairo, it's Tom and Terry. 97.3 FM. To the Hot Stove Society Trivia on Cairo Radio with Chef Tom Douglas.
And Thierry Rotiro, the chef in a hat.
And today's trivia is brought to you by Rub With Love Spice Rubs, Sauces, and Mustards. Handcrafted and versatile. They add a flavorful kick and a whole lot of love to just about any meat, fish, or vegetable. I make them right out there in our warehouse where the Sirius Takeout is in Ballard. Look for Rub With Love products in your local grocery stores like the Ballard Market, Shoreline Central, QFCs, Met Markets, all over the place. We love that they're out and about. Butcher shops, fish shops, and find them online at TomDouglas.com or Amazon or Costco or look all over the place. See if you can find them. Today's lucky winner is who, Amy?
Katie, who is listening in Linwood. And today's package is Rub With Love for veggie lovers, veggie rub for roasting, toasted shallot mustard for salad dressing, and ginger pineapple teriyaki for stir fry.
Yay, sounds like fun.
Yum, me.
And, you know, the loser, you all, Tina, I don't know if you know this or not, but the loser has to pay for shipping.
Oh.
Because I'm paying for the prize.
Yeah. So.
All right, I'm going to get my wallet out now.
The sad part is, I think two out of the last 4 weeks, I had to do the prize and pay for shipping, which really bums me out.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
So you don't have to pony something up anymore. That's good. I don't have to give something away when I lose.
Yeah. You just have to Venmo us.
What happens if I win? What do I get?
You get glory and cheer. And
I already have glory.
A big attaboy.
All right.
All right, so chefs, I'm going to ask each of you 5 questions, and we'll have Thierry go first, just in case you have forgotten how this goes, Tina.
Thank you, Amy.
You got it. All right, Thierry, are you ready?
I am so ready.
Okay. This chowder has a clear broth that contains clams, potatoes, onions, and bacon. Can you name this chowder?
New England chowder?
No, Rhode Island.
Oh, that was a tricky one. She said clear broth, chef.
Yeah.
What type of clams are used in Delaware style clam chowder?
The clam they use on the East Coast. So, what do they call them?
We grow a lot of them in Eastern Washington.
Oh yeah, I'm sure you do.
Cherry stone clams.
Cherry stone. Wow, that's 2-4-2.
Oh, man. All right, this one is multiple choice. The fruit of the mango is called A, droop, B, carp, or C, stone.
Stone.
Wrong. It is a droop. Okay.
Of course it is wrong.
Which multiple choice?
Tina is so happy right now.
I know. She's very excited. I know I can tie with Thierry so far.
Okay, good. Multiple choice again. Which of these is not a distant relative of the mango? A, kiwi, B, pistachio, C, cashew, or D, poison ivy?
I'm going to go with kiwi.
You're correct.
Yay!
I'm not a kiwi fan, so.
Okay, last question. Multiple choice. Which seasoning would you use to replace the flavor of eggs? A, turmeric, B, sumac, C, black salt, or D, paprika?
I know this one. I just used it.
I would say turmeric.
No, it's black salt.
Tina is correct.
Or kolanamak.
Oh, black salt.
If you will. Isn't it kolanamak?
I don't have a clue what you guys are talking
about. So it's really interesting. You know why I use it is if I make a tofu scramble, I use it as a finishing salt, and it makes it taste like eggs. It's got this weird sulfury funkiness to it, and it's really good.
Exactly. It's the sulfurous odor.
Yeah, it's stinky.
Well, that's glad that was my question.
I know.
Okay.
All right, Thierry, you got one out of five.
Chef, I don't know if your pneumonia is affecting your brain or not right now. That's a tough one. Tough day.
For sure it is today.
Yeah.
Tina, you're on.
All right, Tina.
Hey.
Here's your moment. Okay.
Black
number
salt.
Number one. What is another name for New England style clam chowder?
White clam chowder.
So close. Boston clam chowder.
Oh, of course. Oh my God. That was really dumb. Wow. That was really dumb. I really just had to think like one step sideways. I just didn't do it. Okay. Wait. Okay. I'm here. I'm here now.
There are more than 15,000 species of clams, but only 150 are edible. True or false?
That is true.
You are correct.
I'm correct.
All right. We got a tie.
Oh. Good job.
What is the sweet and sour relish made of mangoes and spices called?
Sweet and sour relish, mango, chutney.
Yay!
Bam! Diggity!
Yay!
All right, multiple choice. Mango is abundant in which of these vitamins? B and C, B and D, A and B, or A and C?
I'm going to say A and C.
Correct.
Hot diggity dog.
Woo! 3 out of 4 so far. All
nice.
Right, last one.
It's my best day.
Multiple choice. Ooh, which goody. Plant milk has the most protein? A, soy, B, almond, C, cashew, or D, oat?
I'm sorry, my watch went off. Can you say that one more time?
Which plant milk has the most protein? A, soy, B, almond, C, cashew, or D, oat?
I'm going to say soy.
Correct.
Oh, my gosh.
4 out of 5.
Oh, my
God. Tina.
Way to bring it, Noel.
My best day.
All right, Tommy D, are you ready?
I guess not.
Going for 5?
I thought I was ready.
Tom was like,
luckily, I don't have to beat Tina. I just have to beat Terry.
Yeah, that's true. What year was Ivers founded?
Oh, geez.
Oh, geez.
There's no multiple choice?
No.
Gosh, it's on the sign.
Do you want me to give you multiple choice?
No, I don't. Just keep clam.
Cute.
It was 1938.
That's exactly what I was going to guess. You didn't even give me a chance. 1938.
Oh.
Winner.
Winner. Can you tell me what Long Island clam chowder is?
I'd say it's made with gooey duck because it has a long neck. And no, I'm just kidding. What can I tell you about it? I'm going to say that it is a red chowder.
Sort of. It is a mix between New England style and Manhattan. So it's a pinkish, creamy tomato.
What do you say, team? I guess
I said you got that.
I think you got it.
Okay.
Okay.
The largest exporter of the mango is A, Brazil, B, Mexico, C, South Africa, or D, India.
Man, they do a lot in all those places.
I really do like a mango, I got to tell you. The sticky rice mango?
I'm going to go with Mexico.
No, it's India.
Yeah.
India.
I should know because they have so many people.
Okay, multiple choice. What part of the mango tree is toxic to animals? A, the leaves, B, raw mangoes, C, the shoots, or D, bark?
I'm going to say bark.
Oh, no. It is the leaves.
The leaves.
Wrong. All right, last question. So you're at 1 out of 4.
Oh, really?
You got this one. Which vegan thickening agent is a good substitute to replace gelatin with?
To replace gelatin.
An idea, but I don't
know. Well, there's so many.
List a few.
Okay, so I'm going to start with arrowroot, tapioca, cornstarch, the stuff from...
It's not arrowroot?
The stuff from cooking garbanzo beans.
Aquafaba.
Aquafaba.
No.
Those are all. Those all answer the question.
Okay. Well, I'm looking for agar.
Oh, you're absolutely right.
Yeah,
I got that wrong. Yeah, all right, Terry and I tie.
Wait, there's a word for me right now, and it doesn't start with an L. I believe it starts with the W.
And you have all the glory of being the winner of today's Tasty Trivia. If you want to be like Tina and be a winner, go get some Rub With Love products at your local grocery store. If you want to be part of the show, you can join the community on Facebook at Hot Stove Society Radio. You're listening to us on Cairo, of course, and this show is produced by Amy Richardson, sound by Sean McFadden, and our editor is Sean, don't call me Del Torre. Remember, if you're missing any episode of our Hot Stove Society show on Cairo, you can listen via podcast. Just subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast app.
Thanks for listening and have a fabulous weekend.